You're listening to CBC Radio 1, 99.1, Toronto.
Hello again, I'm Mary Lou Finley.
And I'm Barbara Budd. This is As It Happens, Part 2. Yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell outlined the American case against Iraq to the United Nations. Mr. Powell's presentation included satellite pictures, reports from spies and defectors, and conjecture on the part of the American government. And he concluded, "The evidence is irrefutable. Saddam Hussein is a danger to the world, and he must be stopped." Well, now the world's attention moves to the United Nations Security Council, because it's there that the all-important debate over war in Iraq will take place, and it will take place behind closed doors. Tonight, As It Happens, simulates what just might happen behind those closed doors, as we assembled our own Security Council. We've gathered experts from around the world to represent the UN countries with the most power, those with a permanent seat on the Security Council. And we've asked them to consider two questions. How strong is the evidence that Iraq is hiding weapons of mass destruction? And does that warrant taking military action? Here are the people we've appointed ambassador for tonight's debate, and they've asked me to tell you that they are expressing the views of the countries that they're representing rather than their own opinions. Well, the People's Republic of China is represented by Charles Burton. Dr. Burton is an expert on China at Brock University and a former counselor for political affairs at the Canadian Embassy in Beijing. British author and historian William Shawcross is the ambassador for Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Dominique Moisy represents France. Dr. Moisy is deputy director of the French Institute of International Relations in Paris. Our Russian ambassador is Sergei Plekhanov, a professor of political science at York University and former deputy director of Moscow's Institute for the Study of the USA and Canada. And finally, Danielle Pletka, the Vice President of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. She represents the United States. Mary Lou Finley is chairing the meeting in the role of the Ambassador of Germany.
Colleagues, Excellencies, this meeting of the Permanent Representatives to the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is before the Council in Document S, which reads, quote, "The situation between Iraq and Kuwait," end of quote. Unless I hear any objection, I shall consider the agenda adopted. The agenda is adopted. The Permanent Representatives of the Security Council will now begin their consideration of Item 2 on the agenda. We will begin with opening statements from each representative. I call now on the Distinguished Representative of the People's Republic of China.
Thank you, Madam President. Taking into consideration the information provided to the UN General Assembly by the U.S. government yesterday, at present the Chinese government believes that more investigations must be made before declaring that Iraq is in material breach of these resolutions. We hope that the United States and the other various parties will hand over their information and evidence to the weapons inspectors. This will facilitate more effective inspections, and through their on-the-spot inspection, they can verify whether this new information and evidence is able to be evaluated. The two agencies should report their findings to the Security Council in a timely way. These inspections have been going on for more than 2 months now. The two agencies have been working very hard, and their work deserves our recognition. It is their view that now they are not in a position to draw conclusions, and they suggest continuing with the inspections. We should respect the views of the two agencies and support the continuation of their work. We hope that the upcoming trip to Iraq by Chairman Blix and Director General El-Baradei on the 8th will yield positive results. The two agencies pointed out not long ago some problems in the inspections. We urge Iraq to adopt a more proactive approach, make further explanations and clarifications as soon as possible, and cooperate with the inspection process. all members of the Security Council agree on the necessity to eliminate weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is fully reflected in relevant Security Council resolutions, particularly the unanimously adopted Resolution 1441. The most important aspect at present remains the full implementation of this resolution. As for what should be the next step, the Security Council should decide through discussions by all members of the Security Council on the basis of the results of the inspections. The Chinese government hopes to see political settlement to the issue of Iraq within the UN framework. As long as there is even the slightest hope for political settlement, we should exert our utmost efforts to achieve that and thereby avoid war. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the distinguished representative of the People's Republic of China. I now give the floor to the permanent representative of France.
Thank you, Madam President. It is the position of the French government that time should be given to the inspectors, that all means of inspection should continue to be pursued. And if it means that we have to double or to triple the number of inspectors, that's fine with the French government. It is the conviction of my country that war is the worst possible option. And therefore, time should be given to the inspectors to prevent war, if that is possible. It is desirable to prevent war because in that particular case, the risk of Arab humiliation in the world after a war that doesn't seem to be evident to the general public opinion, at least in most countries, if not the United States, is obvious. And I think there is also a very great danger which France emphasizes, and that is the use by the United States of war as a normal way of doing politics. The practice of preventive warfare is terribly damaging to the international security system, which should be based on the rule of law and not on the use of force. It is essential in the name of France that all chances be given to peace through the control of the inspectors. Of course, that does not mean that weapons of mass destruction should be left in the possession of Saddam Hussein. But I reiterate the French position: no war without a mandate, no mandate without evidence. It is unclear today that a mandate will be given as long as clear evidence has not been definitely given.
I thank the distinguished representative of France. I now give the floor to the permanent representative of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Distinguished representatives, we all know why we are here yet again. We are here because we all know that Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction in defiance of countless binding council resolutions passed since 1991, most recently Resolution 1441 of November last year, and we know that Iraq is not disarming. Some of us are perhaps more able and more keen, shall I say, to acknowledge this publicly than others. Her Majesty's government, of course, respects the fact that all members face different imperatives, have different constraints. But here in the confines of the Council chamber, we must be straightforward. This is not a picnic. We are dealing with the gravest threat imaginable. Weapons of mass destruction are the most diabolical threat to mankind, and they are possessed by Saddam Hussein, and he is not giving them up, and we all know that. I must congratulate Secretary of State Colin Powell for the masterly presentation he made yesterday of the manner in which the Iraqi authorities are determined to deceive the inspectors sent back into Iraq under Resolution 1441, which, as we all recall, gave Iraq one final opportunity to disarm peacefully. He made it clear that faced with Iraq's abuse of the process, it's well nigh impossible for the inspectors ever to do their job. And let me remind you once again, the inspectors are not detectives who have to find any smoking gun. Under 1441 and all previous binding resolutions, it is for Iraq to surrender its weapons of mass destruction, not for the inspectors to find these needles in a vast national haystack built to deceive and hide. To those who say, just give the inspectors more time, Her Majesty's government replies that after 12 years, time really has run out. I venture to suggest that we only now have inspectors in the country at all because the United States government and my own have been prepared to put military might where our minds and our mouths are. But those soldiers cannot remain in the desert indefinitely. I would like to repeat the words of my Prime Minister, Tony Blair, who recently told Parliament, "The threat is real, and if we do not deal with it, the consequence of our weakness will haunt future generations." He is absolutely right. There is a fundamental choice to be made now. Either the world can continue to be steadfast and use the threat of force and, if necessary, alas, force itself to compel Saddam to disarm, or we can follow the path of least resistance and pretend that giving the inspectors more time will solve the problem. Whatever we say publicly, here in the privacy of this council chamber, we all know that more time will not solve the problem. And we know also that if this council shies away again from enforcing its own resolutions, it will lose its authority, and so will the UN system of which it is the peak. Appeasement, more time, is not an answer now.
I thank the distinguished representative of Great Britain. I give the floor now to the permanent representative of the Russian Federation.
Thank you, Madam President. The position of the Russian Federation can be summarized in 4 points. First, it is extremely important for the United Nations to continue to work together to deal with this challenge in the spirit in which we unanimously adopted 2 months ago Resolution 1441. At stake are preservation of international peace and strengthening international security. At the stake is also effectively dealing with the threat of weapons of mass destruction. And third, preserving and strengthening the United Nations. Second, your Secretary of State Powell has presented data which are troubling, which raise serious questions, and which deserve exhaustive scrutiny. And we have a body of experts we have commissioned to do the job of investigating these data. And this body is the United Nations Inspectors, UNMOVIC and International Atomic Energy Agency, and we must help them do the job. Third point, the government of Iraq must comply fully with the United Nations resolutions. And if the government of Iraq should obstruct the work of the inspectors, it will risk a serious confrontation with the international community and endanger world peace. Number four, time. We must move with all deliberate speed and determination, but we must also be patient and wise. We really have no room for error. The costs of our error and our hasty actions are prohibitive. Thank you.
I thank the distinguished representative of Russia. I now give the floor to the permanent representative of the United States of America.
Thank you. Madam President, yesterday, United States Secretary of State Colin Powell came before the Security Council to make the case that Iraq has not complied with UN Security Council Resolution 1441 and past resolutions agreed to by the Security Council. Secretary Powell made that case over the course of 90 minutes, not because he was required to do so, nor because the terms of UN Security Council resolutions demand that such a case be made, but because of the enormous respect President Bush and he have for this institution. Madam President, the United Nations and this Security Council merit that respect not as an honor due an institution, but because the institution and its members are dedicated by word and by deed to upholding the will of the international community expressed by this body. However, distinguished colleagues, when the words of the Security Council lose their meaning and the United Nations' own members set aside their commitment to the enforcement of the Council's will, the very integrity and credibility of the United Nations are at stake. In UN Security Council Resolution 1441, the Security Council demanded that Iraq provide a, quote, currently accurate, full, and complete declaration of all aspects of its programs to develop chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles, and other delivery systems, unquote, and decides that, quote, false statements or omissions and failure by Iraq at any time to comply with and cooperate fully in the implementation of this resolution shall constitute a further material breach, unquote. UN Security Council Resolution 687 of April 1991 demanded Iraq's full declaration of weapons of mass destruction, unconditional acceptance of the destruction of weapons of mass destruction, and banned the development, construction, or acquisition of any weapons of mass destruction. An inspection system was designed to, quote, verify, unquote, disarmament. 15 subsequent resolutions variously condemned Iraqi non-cooperation and demanded compliance with previous resolutions. Madam President, words have meaning. One may argue that the United Nations should have taken this matter in hand in 1991, 1992, or any subsequent year in which Iraq violated the terms of its ceasefire with Allied forces operating under UN mandate. One may argue that we have been lax in enforcement. What I challenge any member of this body to do is argue that Iraq is now in compliance with the terms of UN Security Council Resolution 1441. We can argue for years over whether a tube is for illegal missiles or illegal uranium enrichment. We can argue whether Iraq's violations are egregious or merely appalling. But we cannot argue that Iraq is now not in material breach of its obligations to the United Nations and to the international community. Those who have argued for more time or more inspectors must recall the words of UN Security Council Resolution 1441, quote, decides to afford Iraq by this resolution a final opportunity to comply with its disarmament obligations, unquote. It does not say we may need more inspectors, or perhaps more time will be needed if Iraq decides to amend initial lies. A final opportunity has come, and, distinguished colleagues, it has gone. More time will afford us more obfuscation. Saddam Hussein's own statements make clear there can be no hope of Iraqi compliance. We can acknowledge our words have no meaning and retire to our homes, or we can act. The moment of decision has arrived. Thank you.
I thank the distinguished representative of the United States of America. That concludes the formal presentations by the permanent representatives. I would now like to open the floor for informal consideration of the issues at hand. If I may begin the discussion by bringing up the last points made by the permanent representative of the United States of America. Is there anyone present here who does not agree that Iraq is in material breach of Resolution 1441, as well as preceding resolutions?
Now, China sees no evidence of material breach at this time because we don't feel that there have been enough investigations. While we respect the statement by the Secretary of State of the United States, we do feel that it's more appropriate that a UN agency should verify these claims, and we urge the United States to hand over all of the intelligence that they have to the UNVIC and IAEA so that they can better investigate the situation and report to the UN Security Council in a timely fashion whether they feel that Iraq is in material breach or not.
If I may respond to the distinguished representative of China.
Yes.
The question of material breach does not relate to the presence or lack of presence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is not a question of proof. Again, the standards set out in Security Council Resolution 1441 are very clear. They demand full cooperation, and they demand an accurate and full and complete declaration of all aspects of Iraq's program. Both IAEA Director Mohammed al-Baradei and UNMOVIC Director Hans Blix have said that the declaration is incomplete. They have added that full cooperation has not been forthcoming. These are the standards for material breach.
Would anybody else like to speak to that
point?
Yes,
Madam President.
The representative for France.
I think one cannot act on suspicion alone. It is very easy to enter a war. It is very difficult to know how it will end. And if you move into that solemn, decisive direction, you must be sure that the reasons for which you are doing it are valid. And I think it is still essential that the governments which have indication of what may constitute a proof of a real material breach should help the UN inspectors and give them all indication which they have. As long as this has not been done, there will be a suspicion that this is a war to change a regime as much as a war to make sure that weapons of mass destruction will not represent a future danger.
May I interject one final point on this question of time? I do think that it is important that we recall that this process did not begin with UN Security Council Resolution 1441. We have not had 2 months of inspections. The inspectors have not been denied ample time. In fact, the original resolutions that created the monitoring system, UNSCOM and the inspection system, was in 1991, fully 12 years ago. Do we require another 12 years, or is it 11, or maybe it's 6? Perhaps one of my distinguished colleagues could tell me what is a reasonable period of time that we should expect, and is 12 years reasonable?
That question is on the floor. Permanent representative of China, where you would like to respond?
I think that China believes that the United Nations is an organization whose purpose is to safeguard the peace of the world. We oppose hegemonism in any form, and we feel that all countries and all members of the international community are equal in the United Nations, whether they're big or strong, strong or weak, rich or poor, and that we should settle our disputes and conflicts through peaceful consultations instead of resorting to force or the threat of force. And so no country should attempt to interfere in the internal affairs of another country under any pretext, still less to bully the weak, invade or subvert other countries. And that no country should attempt to impose its social system and ideology upon others. This is the principles that the UN upholds. They're principles of protecting the sovereignty of nations and upholding the world order and peace.
May I hear from the representative of Great Britain?
Yes, Madam President, I'm shocked by the way in which my distinguished colleagues, the distinguished representatives of several members of the Council, seek to pretend, even in the privacy of this Council chamber, that there is any way in which any of us can declare that Iraq is not in material breach. It is absolutely crystal clear that Iraq is in material breach of 1441. If you will recall, we set two tests. First, that Iraq must not make false statements or omissions in its declaration, but the document that it handed over to the United Nations on December the 7th was certainly full of omissions and of false statements. It was neither full, accurate, nor complete. The second test was a failure by Iraq at any time to comply with and to cooperate fully in the implementation of Security Council Resolution 1441. Dr. Blix himself has said that Iraq was not cooperating with his investigation. Yesterday, Mr. Secretary Powell showed in great detail the ways in which the inspector's work is being thwarted. British intelligence itself reckons that while there are around 110 inspectors in Iraq, they are vastly outnumbered by more than 20,000 Iraqi intelligence officers whose duty is to disrupt inspections and conceal the weapons of mass destruction that every one of my colleagues around this table knows perfectly well that Iraq possesses and is continuing to produce. Crucial documents have been moved to private homes, universities, and even hospitals and mosques, and those in whose homes this material has been hidden have been warned of the consequences if it's discovered. We know that the Saddam's pretense at compliance is an absolute farce, and what faces this Security Council now is perhaps the the gravest threat to the United Nations that has existed, certainly since the end of the Cold War. Do we appease this monstrous tyrant and hold ourselves and the system which we represent up to the mockery of the world, or do we finally confront the infinite danger that he represents?
The representative of the Russian Federation would like to speak.
The representative of the United States has referred to the fact that the pattern of non-compliance has been with us for more than 10 years, and that inspectors have had problems doing their work in Iraq. In fact, we know that several years ago there was a case when they were completely thrown out. So the problem that we're looking at now is not new. I would like to ask the distinguished representatives of both the United States and Great Britain to cite specific evidence that we are facing something radically new, a new level of danger, which should make us think about this extreme measure, this option of last resort to deal with this clear and present danger, which Iraq would represent to international peace and security.
Representative of the United States of America.
I would be pleased to respond to my distinguished colleague. From the perspective of the United States, it is enormously important that all of my colleagues, and indeed all the people of the world, understand that since September 11th, the United States has a more keen understanding of the necessity of meeting threats before they greet us on our own territory. That is an enormously important point, and it cannot be ignored. Does Iraq represent an unacceptable threat, not only to the United States, but to Europe and to the region of the Middle East? Our argument would be that it does, and that in addition, in order to make a counter-argument, I would be very pleased to hear from my colleague at what point would they assess that the threat is unacceptable? At what point would they believe that, in fact, Iraq is not willing to disarm? Were they to provide some assurance to the United States, to the people of the United States, that we could, within a reasonable period of time, expect the full disarmament of Iraq, perhaps this today would be a different discussion.
The representative of China would like to speak, but if I could ask your indulgence, I've been told that some of you would like a short adjournment to consult privately. If there are no objections, I propose that we now take a recess. We will take a recess. Please return to your chairs as soon as possible.
You're listening to a special edition of As It Happens. Tonight, we have convened our own session of the United Nations Security Council. Our ambassadors are debating whether there is enough evidence to authorize military action against Iraq. If you have an opinion on that question, you can have your say too on TalkBack. The number is 416-205-3331.
This meeting is reconvened. The permanent representative of China wanted to speak after the United States of America.
The government of China takes some exception to the comments by the running dog of the new period, hegemonists, I mean the distinguished representative of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and the distinguished colleague from the United States of America. First of all, UNMOVIC and the IAEA, while they may have made some statements in the preliminary stage of their investigations, have not requested that they cease their investigations in Iraq. And we feel that the most appropriate course of action is that UNMOVIC and IAEA finish their investigations and inspections in Iraq and then report to the Security Council, and that the Security Council, on the basis of the equality of all the permanent members of the Security Council, consider this issue carefully and then decide on further action. However, the government of China does question why the government of the United States and the government of the United Kingdom wish to engage, promote the military action against Iraq in such a timely fashion, so soon. That is to say, is it really that Iraq presents an immediate threat to world peace? Do we have any evidence that Iraq is about to engage in offensive military action against any sovereign states? Or are there other motivations for the actions of these two nations relating to their desire to promote their economic interests? The friendship between the peoples of China and the peoples of Iraq is a long-standing one, and we stand on the side of the working class of Iraq in the protection of their sovereign interests and their sovereignty, and we don't feel that foreign nations should become dominant over these regions or engage in menacing military actions to achieve their own hegemonistic goals.
I'm not sure running dog is parliamentary language. Thank you, Permanent Representative of China. Permanent Representative of France, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to reply to the distinguished representatives of the United States and Great Britain. To a large extent, it is obvious that the world would be a safer place without Saddam Hussein. But the world would be a safer place without many leaders, from North Korea to Iran, from Libya, and you can add a long list of names. And it is difficult for my country to see why Iraq should be privileged in the list of the axis of evil defined by the United States. Looking at it from the outside, I would say that North Korea looks today more dangerous than Iraq, that Pakistan will be tomorrow potentially a more serious issue than Iraq is today. So could I be given clear explanation of this choice of Iraq, except for reasons which might be linked to the history of the relationship between the United States and Saddam Hussein, or the very geography of Iraq, or the fact that Iraq, unlike North Korea, has a very deep potential in oil?
May I respond? But I would like very much to also give the opportunity to my distinguished colleague from Great Britain to respond to the various calumnies against him. But just very quickly, I believe my distinguished colleague from France has forgotten where he is sitting and believes, in fact, that he is on the CNN. This is not a debate about American foreign policy. This is a debate about UN Security Council resolutions. There is not a resolution obtaining at this current moment with respect to Pakistan, with respect to Iran, with respect to North Korea. And although we can debate and perhaps agree upon the threat that these nations may represent not only to their own people but to their neighbor and to the international community, it is of Iraq that we have repeatedly demanded disarmament. And it is of Iraq that we speak today. This is not a question of political relativism. This is a question of the meaning of UN Security Council resolutions operating, I might add, under Chapter 7. Thank you.
I would ask the representative of Great Britain to speak now, but if I may interject a question or a remark, I would like to note that it is clear that we are far from agreed here on what move to take. I do think it's clear to the representatives of the United States and Great Britain that they have not persuaded people of the need for war, for military force at this moment. Is there some alternative that could be considered? And I will cede now to the representative of Great Britain.
Well, thank you, Madam President. I would like to echo what my dear friend, the distinguished representative of the United States of America, has just said. We are dealing not with a terrifying threat from North Korea, which indeed, as the distinguished representative from France has pointed out, is a very grave threat, and no doubt that will come before the Security Council in due course. Indeed, perhaps it will come before the Security Council with much greater speed than any of us would wish. And for that very reason alone, it seems to me incumbent upon this Council that it shows that it can act deliberately, cautiously, of course, but properly and with due regard to its own resolutions in the case of Iraq. If, after 12 years and more than 15 resolutions, binding as they are under Chapter 7, if we have no steel to carry out these resolutions still after 12 years, then I'm afraid the North Korean junta will draw the appropriate conclusions and see that the United Nations is indeed the paper tiger that used to be the phrase so favored by my friend and colleague, the distinguished representative of China. And I'm afraid that for the United Nations Security Council to be seen as a paper tiger would be a terrible threat to the peace and security of the world, even greater than that posed today by Saddam Hussein.
The representative of the Russian Federation?
Yeah. I would like to return to the question of whether indeed there is something radically new that we are observing in the international situation which would warrant us to consider the use of force against Iraq. When I raised that question, the distinguished representative of the United States cited the horrendous events of the 11th of September 2001. I would like to emphasize that indeed those events have forced a change in international politics. We are all confronted with this new international threat, the threat of international terrorism. And it is the focus of on this threat and on finding, working out, and using the most effective methods of dealing with that threat and protecting the world against this scourge that motivates the government of the Russian Federation to question the wisdom of using force against Iraq. Iraq is not a base for international terrorism. Yesterday, State Secretary Powell has presented us with some data designed to show that there is a strong link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. And I wish he had not done that, because I don't think that he has made a persuasive case. In fact, his attempt to make much of some murky data has actually created an impression that this particular link between supposed link between Iraq and international terrorism is needed by the United States to strengthen the case for military action against Iraq. But it is another link that I would like to cite, and another connection between the possibility of war on Iraq and the threat of international terrorism. All experts on the region agree that if force were to be used against Iraq with horrendous numbers of casualties, with destabilization in the Middle East, with the...
May I interrupt, Madam President? No one is contemplating the use of force to cause horrendous number of casualties. It is the intention of the United States and Britain, if force eventually and regrettably has to be used in order to enforce Security Council resolutions, that the casualties be kept to a minimum.
Madam President, let me respond to what we've just heard from the distinguished representative of Great Britain. I would like to cite assessments which have recently been produced by the World Health Organization. It's a United Nations agency which has been studying the possible effects of a war on Iraq based on the information that we have about the military strategies that the United States and Great Britain are considering. According to those estimates, up to 500,000 people are likely to either die or be wounded or be subjected to other immediate hazardous effect of the use of force, whereas up to 3 million people are going to fall into a situation, most of them children under the age of 5, are going to find themselves in a situation desperately needing food to survive.
Madam President, if I may interject, this sort of theatrical interjection really does not serve the interests of this council in any way. Clearly, war is objectionable to each and every one of us. Clearly, war is the last option and is not desirable. Certainly, while there are those who may die on the Iraqi side, we, the United States, Britain, and I hope also our other allies, should we go to war, do risk casualties. However, I have not noticed that any of my distinguished colleagues, other than the distinguished representative of Great Britain, have shown a great deal of compassion for the tens and hundreds of thousands who have been murdered by Saddam Hussein.
The representative of China.
Madam President, again, I should remind the representative of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, our distinguished friend, that the era of world colonialism is past, even though China has as well suffered from British colonialism in the history since the Opium Wars of 1840.
I should say that
the Chinese government takes great exception to any suggestion that it should be the function, direct or indirect, of the UN Security Council to engage in the removal of a legally constituted leader of a sovereign country. President Hussein has been the president of Iraq for some time, and he enjoys the support of his people. There are, after all, nearly 200 countries in the world, and there cannot and should not be one mode of development, one concept of values, and only one type of social system in the world, because different countries have different historical systems, social systems, developmental levels, cultural traditions, and concepts of interest. And so all countries should be able to choose the social system, development strategies, and lifestyle to suit their own conditions. Its own people should decide their own affairs, and global issues should be dealt with through consultations by all countries. And so any suggestion of the removal of the president of Iraq is deeply offensive to my nation.
I'm going to have to go back to alphabetical order. The representative for France.
I'm afraid the evolution of the debate is leading to too simplistic, caricatural point of view. Of course, the Iraqi people would love to be able to change leader. One can even hear from Iraq the sound that the bombs will save us from Saddam Hussein. But in the name of the Iraqi people, and in the name of the free choice, so to speak, of one country, can we risk the humiliation of the entire Arab world and the increase of the terrorist motivation to strike at the arrogance of the West?
Excuse
I think
me.
There are two dangers which are confronting the international community. One is that the UN should be considered only as a paper tiger. But there is another danger, which is that the UN will become the instrument, the lackey, so to speak, the servant of the imperial power in the world, the United States, deciding what is legitimate and what is legal, and forcing the international community to follow it in its own definition of legality and legitimacy.
Well, my cher ami, the distinguished representative of France really knows how to lay it on. It's a fantastic production, that. But since France was so carefully involved, so closely, so intimately, so minutely involved in every single word of Resolution 1441, it can hardly be said that the United States was riding roughshod over the United Nations in this case. Every word went through a French magnoscope to make sure that it fitted with French priorities and French concerns. And one of the things that we in Britain find curious now is that the French, who played an enormously important role in producing 1441 as the excellent document that it was, should now be so shy of facing the consequences of 1441 and not addressing the reality that Saddam Hussein has failed to abide by its provisions and it is in material breach.
This is an interesting point of order. In fact, I will remind all of you that we did all vote for Resolution 1441, the representative of Russia, and then, Madam, the representative of the United States.
Thank you.
I would like to cite Resolution 1441 as a marvelous example of the ability of the international community to work together to deal with the threats facing the world. And Resolution 1441 has only begun to act. We should not give up on the process which has started. I don't see why we should abrogate this process. It is clear that as soon as we begin to talk about the early threat of force against Iraq, that the unity which we have forged while we worked on the resolution 1441 and the larger unity in the struggle against international terrorism begins to fall apart. I think that is a very, very ominous indication of the situation of great discord, if not split, that the world will find itself if force is to be used. And by the way, concerning the use of force, the distinguished representative of the United States chose to interrupt me when I was citing figures from a United Nations agency, the World Health Organization, estimating the numbers of people in Iraq, innocent people who will suffer as a result of war. The distinguished representative of the United States called it theatrical. Now, I would like to emphasize that we are not talking about theater. We're talking about the possibility of real people in great numbers dying. As a representative of the country which lost 27 million in World War II, ultimately succeeding in breaking the back of the Nazi war machine, whereas the United States lost more people in that war in automobile accidents than on the battlefield, I think that we have a better sense of what it means to have war on your own soil. Thank you.
The representative of the United States.
If I may deal serially but not alphabetically with my colleagues. First, I certainly defer to my distinguished colleague from Russia in his understanding of what it is like to see 30 million people murdered. It must be very painful. Moving on to other questions, I found the sentiments expressed by my distinguished colleague from Beijing beautiful in their devotion to political freedom and admirable in the extreme. However, we are not discussing the removal of Saddam Hussein, but the disarmament of Saddam Hussein. And the facts on the ground remain to this day that Saddam Hussein has not disarmed. I don't believe any of my colleagues would argue that Iraq has indeed disarmed after 12 years of demands by this body to do so.
May I ask a question here for all of us? We are not compelled to vote on the matter today, and Dr. Blix will be coming to talk to us again on February 14th. But I feel I must put the question out, is there any time limit that we are willing to place on Saddam for compliance? The representative of China would like to speak.
Madam President, the government of Iraq has reported to the United Nations their full compliance with the resolution, and therefore the government of China feels that a verification process is currently underway by UNMOVIC and the IAEA, and that there should be no consideration of military action against Iraq until there is evidence that the statements of the government of Iraq that they have fully complied with the resolutions are able to be affirmed.
Madam President, yes. I think it's clear that Mr. Blix has already produced the evidence that Iraq is lying when it says it's in full compliance, and I'm astonished that my distinguished friend, the representative of the government of China, should even pretend that it is otherwise.
The government of China does not recall Mr. Blix using the word lie.
He said that Iraq is not in compliance with the resolution and is not in compliance with the disarmament provisions.
If I may just ask my colleagues, if you're not willing to answer the question of what amount of time is reasonable and can there be a deadline, may I ask you to point out to me where in UN Security Council Resolution 1441 there is a distinction between a minor violation and a serious violation. What exactly is required?
If the permanent representative of the United States would permit me, I would like to put the question again in a different form, and I would like to put it to the permanent representative of France, because it has been pointed out France has been pivotal in the wording and shaping of the previous resolution. Could I ask you to answer the question if Dr. Blix indicates that there has been non-compliance? When he speaks to us on February 14th, do you have a time frame in mind for a response? And is it within your consideration at all that it should be a military response?
Well, I think there is a time limit that has to be set up. But this time limit cannot be decided in terms of weeks. It has to be decided in terms of months, which means that we should still give time to time. If by the end of the day Saddam Hussein clearly gives indication that he refuses to comply, France will take its international responsibility and still consider all options to be open.
Representative of the...
Madam President, may I interrupt? Could I ask the distinguished representative of France whether France would take its international responsibilities perhaps a little earlier and consider helping in the rotation of the British and American troops who are now stationed in the Gulf and cannot remain there indefinitely while Saddam Hussein takes his time. They will need to be changed. Perhaps France would like to send some troops as well to show its willingness to go along with this attempt to enforce the resolutions peacefully.
France will not comment on that remark.
The representative of the United States.
Again, the facts are very clear. We can discuss extraneous matters and we can discuss shades of compliance. We can discuss whether or not Al-Qaeda is present, whether or not Al-Qaeda is present in Iraq. But the facts remain in UN Security Council Resolution 1441. They demand full compliance. We have not received full compliance. They demand a full disclosure. We did not receive a full disclosure. At what point do we ourselves take our own words seriously? I wonder whether anyone can explain this to me.
Is the United States willing to give the Security Council more time itself to try to forge an agreement among the members? I think it's very important that the United States act with the United Nations Security Council backing if there's to be action.
First of all, I'm glad you've turned to me again, because there is an important point overlying everything that we've discussed today that was not brought up, and that is the fact that the intelligence that Secretary of State Powell laid out yesterday is in fact available to every permanent member of the Security Council. Your own intelligence services have in fact got exactly the same information that we do about the activities of the state of Iraq at this time. So it is important to understand that it is not about the United States making the case. Your own services have made such a case to you, should you choose to believe it. Now, let me answer the question that Madam President posed. It is vitally important to the United States that the Security Council act in concert. It is vitally important to the United States that the credibility of the Council and of the international community be maintained. It is also vitally important to the United States to defend our national security. And the job of the President of the United States is, I'm afraid, first and foremost, to defend the national security of the United States as he best sees fit. And that will require moving expediently to deal with the threat posed by Saddam Hussein.
There's clearly not sufficient agreement among us for any formal vote today, but I would like to ask you, if there were a vote today on whether or not to use military force in Iraq, how would you vote? China.
The People's Republic of China will abstain on that motion.
The people, could I ask, please, the permanent representative of France?
As things stands now, France would abstain.
Could I ask the representative of Great Britain?
Her Majesty's government will be in favor of whatever is needed to enforce Resolution 1441.
And the permanent representative of Russia?
The Russian Federation will abstain.
And the representative of the United States of America?
The United States of America supports the use of force to enforce UN Security Council resolutions.
I thank you all. The Security Council remains seized of the matter. The meeting is adjourned.
In our mock UN Security Council debate tonight, our ambassadors were, for the People's Republic of China, Charles Burton, who is a China expert at Brock University. British author and historian William Shawcross was the ambassador for Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Representing France was Dominique Moisy, the deputy director of the French Institute for International Relations in Paris. Our Russian ambassador was Sergei Plekhanov, an expert on Russian foreign policy at York University, and Daniel Pletka, the vice president of foreign and defense policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute, represented the United States. And Mary Lou Finley was chair of the meeting in the role of the ambassador of Germany.
It's a job I like. I think I might take it up permanently. A much-deserved thank you and a nod to Anita Elash, who produced tonight's debate and appointed the ambassadors. Thanks a lot, Anita.
That's it for As It Happens for Thursday, February 6th. Coming up on CBC Radio 1 News and Weather.
After that, Sounds Like Canada Tonight with guest host Bernard Saint-Laurent.
Later on the Arts Today, French painting from Gauguin to Matisse. Eleanor Wachtel talks with the curator of a new exhibit at the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts.
As It Happens, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Mary Lou Finley. Good night.
I'm Barbara Budd. Good night.